to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title actually explains everything for you. So if you're actually here because you want to listen to sci-fi, if you want to listen about horror, if you want to know about westerns, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong podcast. So sorry, you better move somewhere else. But in this podcast, specifically, I talk about the news that happened this week regarding animation. So first off, I would go and discuss about a brand new box office record that has occurred and how 2016 will actually mark into animation history because of it. Then we will be looking into one of Walt Disney's earliest works. Then afterwards, we will be looking upon a brand new series that features Spider-Man. Then afterwards, we will be looking a bit more onto Pokemon Sun and Moon. And finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, and all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Okay, so first off, this is actually something that actually occurred last week during the weekend box office. And this was something that a lot of people did expect. It took a little bit of a while, but it finally happened. And it's honestly really surprising, and I'm totally excited for it. The time has come for this to actually happen. It is regarding Finding Dory. It has now officially hit, if I may count, actually, it's on October 9th that it occurred, that Finding Dory officially surpassed $1 billion at the box office. Now, you might be wondering, well, Matt, this is not really new. This is not really a brand new record at the box office. In fact, this is actually the fifth animated feature to surpass $1 billion at the box office. In fact, this year, we actually got another animated film that surpassed $1 billion at the box office with Zootopia. Ah, that is true. But that is the reason why. The last statement that you made is actually the reason why we got a brand new record that is going to go down in history in animation in terms of the box office. Finding Dory and Zootopia are the two animated films responsible that in 2016, for the first time in history, that two animated features surpassed $1 billion at the box office. And coincidentally enough, both of which are actually distributed by Disney. So Disney can actually take also responsible for the record of being the company that is the first to release two animated features in 1 year that has surpassed $1 billion at the box office. And keep in mind with Finding Dory, this just adds onto the list of all the other box office records that it has beaten. If you guys didn't keep track, let me just tell you some of them. It started out as the biggest opening ever in all levels, the biggest Thursday preview, the biggest single day, which is on Friday, sorry about that, and also the biggest opening weekend. So it beat off Minions, and it also beat off Shrek the Third. And on top of that, it is also the highest grossing animated feature of all time at the domestic box office, so far making, as I'm recording this, around more than, almost $500 million at the box office. So at least in North America, it made more money than any other one, even more than Frozen. And now it has reached the point that, when you take account worldwide, it has now made more than $1 billion, which is honestly very shocking. And I think I remember all the way back when Finding Dory actually made that record of the high, when it actually got the highest opening of all times for an animated feature. I think I actually called it that this was, this is going to be the next movie that's going to hit $1 billion at the box office. Oh, actually, I just realized, there is another box office record that Finding Dory did contribute, is that in terms of animated films, they actually, for animation, they got the longest streak for being number one at the box office for a long time, where Finding Dory actually covered 3 weeks, and then afterwards you got The Secret Life of Pets, which covered the two afterwards until I believe it was Star Trek Beyond that came in, and then suddenly it stopped it. So for 5 weeks in a row, 5 weeks in a row, an animated feature was at the top of the box office, and Finding Dory actually really did help contribute to that. And it really is fantastic. It really is amazing. And going back to what I said before, I think I called it that Finding Dory was going to be the next animated feature to hit $1 billion at the box office. And I think we have reached the point that I don't think we're going to get another one per se, unless somehow, like, either Moana or Sing, it just became a giant hit and it's going to continue on. I don't know, because technically with The Secret Life of Pets, like, it is a very, very successful film, but I don't think it's going to reach $1 billion at the box office. I don't think it's going to make the same numbers as Minions, considering that it has only, like, in terms of the worldwide box office, it only made a total of $850 million, which is still amazing, which is still phenomenal, which is actually still better than the grand majority of all the other animated features, even combined. But I don't think it's going to make it up there at $1 billion at the box office. I think it lost the race right there. But Finding Dory actually did manage to make it. And I think now we're starting to see how things are getting really serious for animated features, how they are starting to become a massive powerhouse at the box office, especially the ones made by Disney. When they actually play their cards right, when it's highly acclaimed, when they actually make, like, when they put in real effort to make something phenomenal. Because admittedly, like, not only are Zootopia and Finding Dory the highest grossing animated films, but it's with good reason. It's because they are some of the best animated films that we've got this year. They are absolutely phenomenal pieces of work. Like, Zootopia, hands down, one of the best animated films of the decade. And Finding Dory, okay, maybe it's not the best Pixar film, but it's actually really close to be up to, like, Pixar's common standards that we grew accustomed to back in the last decade, when we got movies like Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, Ratatouille, WALL-E, and Up, and all those films. Like, it's close. It was really, really close to that level, and it still results in a fantastic movie. So with all that said, you can definitely tell how animation is really getting serious, and how it seriously is being a moneymaker. And, you know, it's great to see that on Disney's part of it as well, because not only that, like, sure, with Finding Dory, it is a sequel, and it really is a strange sequel, because everybody's pretty much I remember everybody was scratching their heads, thinking it's like, really? A sequel to Finding Nemo? Why do we need that? And somehow, it actually worked out well, and it just results into something that is actually really amazing. And, you know, this is definitely going to continue to flourish the entirety of the Finding Nemo franchise. And, like, even to this day, the original Finding Nemo is still a very strong film, and that's probably what helped it with Finding Dory's success, is because, in the long run, Finding Nemo is still a very strong movie. It's still a highly memorable film, still regarded as one of the best works by Pixar, and that's definitely what helped contribute with Finding Dory, that, in a way, considering that it was released about 13 years after the original, like, it did contribute a little bit to, in terms of the nostalgia. Like, the reason of its success is a little bit similar to how Toy Story 3 was highly successful, and how that actually hit $1 billion at the box office. It really tapped upon that nostalgia, where a lot, like, I'm sure a lot of the audiences are young adults, kind of like me, whom back in the day, like, would actually remember back in 2003 when they saw Finding Nemo in theaters. And I was one of them. I remember. I highly enjoyed Finding Nemo when I saw it in theaters. And with Finding Dory, I remember it brought me back. Like, and it's true. Like, technically, like, that is one of the flaws with Finding Dory, is that it does take a little bit too much of the similar steps of Finding Nemo, but it manages to take also the right steps of Finding Nemo, so that at least, like, it managed to do a lot of things right. On top of the wonderful animation and expanding upon some of the characters that we've already loved before, especially with Dory. So it's definitely amazing that we're starting to see more animated features become such a huge powerhouse. And of course, like, Disney is going to corner the market, because at this point, like, we gotta accept that they are the masters of animation. So it's hard at this point to really compete. And the only ones who can compete is just Illumination Entertainment. And so, looking into the future now, are we going to see more records like this? Are we going to see more animated films? Like, maybe in the following years, we're going to see maybe not just two, but like maybe three or even four animated films that would surpass $1 billion at the box office. Well, that'll highly depend if they can play their cards right, especially on Disney's front. Considering that Disney would usually release two animated features a year with Walt Disney Animation Studios and Pixar, it's going to highly depend. I don't think next year it's really going to happen unless they do something phenomenal with Coco. I don't think Cars 3 is actually going to be like a massive, like, it is going to be a great big hit, but I don't think it's going to be $1 billion hit. I highly doubt that. Unless they actually do something really good with it, but I don't know. People lost faith with Cars 2, so I don't know if it's really going to tap upon that well. But we'll just have to wait and see. It'll highly depend on what the other animated features will offer. I think honestly, for now, in terms of what we got here, it's gonna be a rare moment. Like, this is not gonna be every day where in a year we're going to see two animated features or even more get $1 billion at the box office. But this is going to be something that we gotta cherish. We gotta really take it in. And who knows? Like I said before, we still got a couple more animated films coming up. We got DreamWorks Trolls, but I don't see that being a $1 billion hit. Unless it's like a really good film, we'll just have to wait and see. There's also Disney's Moana, which they really are building up. And if it is as grand as they try to make it to be, like if it's going to be Frozen grand, then we could be seeing three animated films probably. And then they also got Sing, which it might be released a little too close to the holiday season for it to really be a hit, even be like equally as much of a hit as Secret Life of Pets, but who knows, we'll just have to wait and see on that part. And so far from what I've heard in terms of the previews, what they did in Toronto and stuff like that, they say that Sing is actually a pretty good movie, so it's going to be pretty interesting. So I can't wait to see it when it comes out. So who knows what we're going to get. But yeah, so far with the record of Finding Dory, I just want to say congratulations to the Walt Disney Company for getting that huge honor of having two animated films in 1 year have over $1 billion at the box office. Congratulations to that record. Congratulations to the people at Pixar, all the animators, all the artists, all the writers, all the filmmakers who worked upon this film to create something that ended up being highly successful. And also, I just want to say major congratulations to Andrew Stanton, whose work his work seriously paid off now. Now that he can be one, like, he can pretty much join the four other directors who has now, or like, or the four other films with the directors in which he made a $1 billion movie. And by the way, one more thing I would like to add. In terms of Finding Dory, is it going to grow? Are we going to see Finding Dory's record become a lot bigger? Is it going to be the highest grossing animated feature of all time? Yeah, no. I mean, like, at this rate, Finding Dory is really slowing down. And, considering that Finding Dory was released in June, and now that we're, like, as I'm recording this, we are in October, I highly doubt that we're going to see Finding Dory's numbers, grow substantially larger, like, become bigger and bigger. I'm honestly doubting if it's going to even surpass Zootopia, Which, by the way, since Finding Dory is at the billion-dollar point, Zootopia made a total of $1.023 billion. So I don't think Finding Dory is going to pass those numbers, but I think it's still going to sit well. In fact, actually, let me just do one little thing just to double check on something. I just want to look into Toy Story 3's records. Oh yeah, no. Okay, no. I think in terms of the highest grossing animated films of all time, I think Finding Dory is going to sit pretty for now in fifth place. So I think it'll go and rest on that part. So yeah, that's pretty much the whole story with Finding Dory. So just remember 2016, because we are going to remember this year for a long time. So for our next story, I'm going to be very honest with you. Originally, I was about to actually talk about the live-action remake of Aladdin that Disney wanted to make, and the fact that they actually brought in Guy Ritchie to come in to direct the film. If you guys don't know, Guy Ritchie is also the same guy who directed the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. And with that, honestly, like, I'm starting to be a little bit tired with all these announcements of the Disney's live action remakes and stuff like that. You know, I was previously joking when I stated that, okay, well, every week now we're going to be getting a news about Disney's live action remakes, considering that before we got the announcement of The Lion King, and then now we're going to get Mulan, and then this week we just got Aladdin. And honestly, I got tired. I'm just like, really? I mean, you know, I'm just going to be repeating the same things over and over that, oh, Disney's going to make another live-action remake. Disney is going to make another live-action remake. Like, give me some variety. Give me something fresh. Give me something new. And then suddenly, in the last minute, this story popped up. And honestly, for animation fans, this is a story that's much more worthy to talk about than what we already know about regarding the Aladdin remake. And I'm talking about, this is still going to be Disney, but we're going to go way back, and literally way, way back to Walt Disney's first ever works with Alice's Comedies. Now, apparently, at the, Lyon's Lumiere Festival in France, they have actually announced, one of the companies actually that was sponsoring there, Malavita Films, they have announced that they are going to go and distribute restored versions of Walt Disney's Alice's Comedies series. Now, going into my source here in Variety, they have actually stated, there's something in here. There's something that I wanted to say here, but Malavita tracked down the Alice's comedy reels from in Amsterdam at the iFilm Museum, the only institution in the Netherlands that buys film collections. They also specialize in restoration. Malavita and I collaborated in digital restorations on the Disney shorts with prominent Paris-based Titra Film Labs. And by the way, they are permitted to do this considering that the Alice's comedies nowadays are actually considered in the public domain. So what's pretty much going to be going on is that next year at the Lumiere Film Festival is that they're going to premiere all these, all the cartoons of Alice's comedies in their vintage section, showing like the classic old, like the old cartoons and the old movies and stuff like that. And then they actually are going to distribute it globally. So you can actually go and buy Walt Disney's Alice's comedies. And honestly, I find this to be very fascinating and very interesting to discuss about, considering that if we look back in recent years, one of the big things that Disney wanted to do is to reintroduce Oswald the Lucky Rabbit to the modern public. If you guys don't know, more than a decade ago, when Bob Iger was first appointed as the CEO of Disney, one of his first missions that he wanted to do was to get back Oswald the Lucky Rabbit from Universal to Disney, considering that Oswald was the cartoon superstar before Mickey Mouse. And even nowadays, we see Oswald appearing in several appearances, making like little Easter eggs in some of their recent films like Zootopia, Big Hero, I think Zootopia, maybe I'm wrong, but especially like Big Hero 6 or the animated short Get a Horse. And then Also, you got the Epic Mickey video games, which actually co-stars Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. And that was the one where it really reintroduces Oswald as a character, kind of like Mickey's older brother. And you got that entire storyline going on right there. And honestly, I absolutely adore it. Very well written. I'm probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Epic Mickey fan there is out there. So I definitely do appreciate it on that part. And on top of that, Oswald is even making appearances at the theme parks, where you actually got meet and greets of Oswald. And like you even got like some Oswald memorabilia as well. So Oswald is starting to become a more prominent Disney character. But then you got Alice's Comedies, which was actually even before Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. And that one is not really looked upon as much. And I guess that's actually because, considering that nowadays it is among the, you know, it's not copyrighted. It is among the public domain. So, of course, like a random company like Malavita would actually come in and they would go and help bring it out there. But I think what Malavita is doing is actually a fantastic thing, because right now they're preserving history and pretty much giving it to the public, you know, just presenting the world what Walt Disney originally did with the Alice's Comedies. And, you know, it is actually very fascinating, because like we can actually learn a lot from these old cartoons, like what they've previously done. So we can look a little bit into Walt Disney's origins, how he developed characters, and a bit of his style of humor. We would also see a bit of the introduction of how Walt Disney ended up developing Peg Leg Pete, which is the first ever Disney character, and currently is the oldest Disney character of all time that is still continuing on today. We still recognize Pete as a prominent Disney character and pretty much the world's first ever Disney villain. And on top of that, like, we can even learn from it in an animation standpoint, where we see like the combination of live action, where we see like the real little girl of Alice played by Virginia Davis, and how she would interact with all the other cartoons that's around her. Malavita actually did state that it was a little bit difficult to do so, saying that it was quite complicated. It was a quite complicated technical feat, because the original material is 18 frames per second, but for restoration work, you need 25 frames per second. Malavita has added music, which they co-produced with French orchestra Orchestre de Chambre d'Autres. The orchestra composed the score, which can also perform for a live cine concert. And you know, honestly, it's definitely fantastic. I mean, technically, nowadays, yes, with Oswald, you can get all the classic cartoons. Disney actually did release a part of the Walt Disney Treasures. Like you got all the entire collection of Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which was under the watchful eye of Walt Disney. And even nowadays, we are actually discovering more and more lost animated shorts that are now brought back to life. We got a couple of them coming out, and you know, it's honestly very interesting, and it's really nice that like those lost cartoons are now actually back after almost a century of being lost. So, you know, it's very nice that we see Oswald coming back, but, you know, I think now it's time that we see, like, both Alice and Julius actually make a comeback as well, to be, like, not necessarily get the Oswald treatment, to be back as, like, Mickey's older brother and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying to give Alice's Comedies the massive Disney treatment, but, you know, it's honestly really great that we got Alice's Comedies back in back in the eye of the public, especially for nowadays. And you know, honestly, I'm really excited. Like, if they can manage to actually release it either on DVD or on Blu-ray, I'll definitely be one of the first to go and get it. I mean, this is animation history that we're talking about, and not just that, we're also talking about Disney history. So this is definitely a great piece to own for any big Disney fan, and especially those like myself who are very fascinated looking upon the history. So I think it's going to be a very like a really good piece to look upon. So I'm pretty excited next year to see if they're going to bring out the Alice's Comedies Everywhere, how many they're going to have, if they actually are going to put in the entire Alice's Comedies collection onto this. Who knows? Like, I know technically there are some on YouTube right now, but having them restored in great condition, well, it's not every day that we're going to get that. So I'm pretty excited for it. Okay, so for our next story, it's actually kind of coincidental, I must say, because not too long ago, I just released my review of The Spectacular Spider-Man, and if you guys don't know what that is, it is often regarded as the most highly acclaimed Spider-Man series, and not only that, but even one of the most highly acclaimed series that features a superhero next to Batman, the animated series, so it's really that popular, and honestly, I could see why. And, well, not popular, actually, but more that praised. But going back into Spectacular Spider-Man, I could definitely tell how it definitely is such an awesome series where the writing is absolutely top-notch. Where, of course, you get all the amazing action and even the animation is well executed on that part where you see Spidey fighting off against, like, all the other villains like Doc Ock, Sandman, Rhino, the Green Goblin, and all those characters. It's definitely cool to check out. But the biggest thing is mostly how, like, it's not just on that, but also you kind of see the normal life of Peter Parker. And, like, they even got that aspect to work, mostly seeing his school life, his relationship with his friends, his love life. And on top of that, like, the struggle that he has just to be a normal kid in high school and trying to be Spider-Man at the same time. Like, it really does balance it out. And you could tell the amount of heart that's been put in to fully respect the origins of Spider-Man with how he was in the comics. But unfortunately, the series is short-lived, not because of poor ratings or all that kind of stuff. It was more because there was complications with the rights. When Sony Pictures had the rights to the Spectacular Spider-Man show and also the character designs, while Marvel actually now has the rights to using Spider-Man for TV series. And ultimately, just because two different companies own the rights in order to make one series like the Spectacular Spider-Man, it just couldn't happen. Like, it ultimately got canceled and things couldn't continue from there. But then they would go and release a brand new series to take its place called Ultimate Spider-Man. And in that part, not only would they add more adventures onto Spider-Man, but they would also include many of the other Marvel characters, including Captain America, Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Deadpool, Spider-Gwen, and all those people. But unfortunately, that series is not as well received. Even though it is one of the longer running Spider-Man shows, a lot of people are just turned off by the juvenile tone and the weak humor. A lot of people didn't really like that. However, it looks like the series will be coming to an end on January 2017, and that is because Disney and Marvel actually has a brand new plan for Spidey, and they want to make a brand new series that they just announced at the New York Comic Con, which is Marvel Spider-Man. Sorry, I gotta do my little impression of sniffles there. But anyways, now if I may take my source here from the website of the Walt Disney Company, Court Lane, Senior Vice President of Marvel Animation and Family Entertainment, has announced, "We've been secretly nurturing Marvel Spider-Man for years now, so we are thrilled to finally announce it. The simple title reflects a back-to-basics approach, the story of an ordinary teen, Peter Parker, who suddenly finds himself with strange new powers and overwhelming responsibility. And thanks to story editor Kevin Shinnick and supervising director Philip Pignotti, it's just filled with heart and humor." And on top of that, Mark Buhaj, Senior Vice President of Programming and General Manager at Disney XD, added, "Spider-Man is the biggest action hero in the world. He is an iconic character whose doability makes him both relatable and aspirational for the Disney XD audience. We're thrilled to continue our partnership with Marvel in this new original series that offers a fresh take on a beloved classic that will engage both new and existing Spidey fans with its compelling drama, exciting action, and the signature sense of humor. So with all that said, it's actually pretty interesting when you think about 2017, because it's going to be the big reboot of Spider-Man. As you guys know, in 2017, there's going to be Spider-Man Homecoming, which is so far one of, if not the most anticipated movie of that year, considering it's going to be Spider-Man's big comeback to the big screen after he horribly screwed up with the Amazing Spider-Man movies, even though technically it's still in the hands of Sony. Like, it's not entirely Marvel's film. It's kind of a collaboration between Marvel and Sony. So, I don't know, like, maybe the profits are just going to be split onto these two. Who knows? But, yeah, basically, Sony just really doesn't want to let go, or else they knew that their company is pretty much going to be destroyed at that point. But other than that, apparently, on top of that, they're also going to do this right now. And I guess this is going to be Disney's answer to pretty much cash in to actually do something in their hands to actually make something with Spider-Man, considering that technically Sony just doesn't want to let go of Spider-Man. And honestly, Marvel's Spider-Man wouldn't have actually happened if it weren't for Sony really desperately need to keep the rights to Spider-Man so that they can do their thing, so that they can have a franchise of their own. Or, like I said before, like, without Spider-Man, the entirety of Sony Pictures would pretty much collapse in itself. But other than that, honestly, it's actually very nice that they want to go back to the more simpler roots to Spider-Man, where they see the errors of Ultimate Spider-Man. They want to take that out. Like, they don't want to try to sprinkle it with all the other Marvel characters and just make it about Spider-Man. Just make it his thing. If you got to bring in other Marvel characters, let Spider-Man Homecoming do it, because since that is a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it has been confirmed that Iron Man is going to be in it. So, leave the Marvel crap onto the movies and just keep it simple with Spider-Man. And the biggest thing, though, is going to be regarding the humor, because I think that's going to be the biggest selling point and the biggest change to see if they have improved or not from Ultimate Spider-Man. If they go back to the same route onto, with the way that they make it sound, it looks like they could go back to just how things used to be with Spectacular Spider-Man, where it's simultaneously the life of Peter Parker, and we see his balance of being Spider-Man and just being Peter Parker, while trying to keep those two identities, just completely split. So, maybe they could go into that, and, we'll see if it can actually do something as good as Spectacular Spider-Man, and if Kevin Shinnick and Philip Pignotti can actually do something that would be as worthy as that show. Because if it is, especially nowadays with the internet, it can actually grow into something really big. And especially nowadays, now there's not going to be any, trouble with the rights, considering now it's purely 100% Marvel's movie. They don't have to do anything extra with it. This is a movie made by Marvel. This is not a movie, sorry, but a TV show purely by Marvel. No other company is involved with it, so it's all good on that end. But at the same time, who knows, maybe they could actually have some flaws in the veins of Ultimate Spider-Man. But honestly, that's going to be the big question. What direction are they going to bring with Spider-Man? We pretty much know for now that they are going to go and make just Spider-Man, just let Spider-Man be Spider-Man. However, we're not 100% sure if they're actually going to go and do something new with Spider-Man, if they want to do a new twist on Spider-Man, if they want to try a new style of humor. It's all going to be in the execution at this point. Conceptually, it does sound interesting, but is it going to work? And honestly, that is going to be something that we'll have to wait and see in 2017. But, you know, this is actually pretty interesting to see how to see that Spider-Man will be coming back, not just in movies, but also in TV shows. So who knows? Maybe things will work out for Spidey. Now, for our next story, lately we have heard a lot of news regarding Pokemon Sun and Moon, especially with some of the new Pokemon that have been announced, and especially you might have seen this going around, people making memes out of the Alolan forms of Grimer and Muk, where you got Grimer, who looks a lot like Pete from like the classic Disney cartoons, and then you also got Muk, who... It's just like now he's become he became a rainbow with rocks, and like now they've both become poison and dark type. So that's pretty interesting to see, and like now they got like on top of like plenty of new other Pokemon. But on top of that, the Pokemon Company has also made an announcement regarding their anime of Pokemon Sun and Moon. If you guys don't recall, a while back, I have made the announcement, well, not me, but Pokemon made the announcement that they are going to release a brand new animated series, a brand new adventure where Ash and Pikachu are in the Alolan region, but this time, Ash is going to school. And that's pretty much the big selling point, is that they're going to take a big change in the direction of the series, and they're just going to go and see if, you know, if they're actually going to go and... add in something new to the Pokemon franchise, to what they haven't done in, like, I don't know, nearly 20 years of its existence now. Like, well, technically, Pokemon is turning 20, like, Pokemon is 20 years old now. And by the way, there is one more thing that I want to correct myself. Last time, I mentioned how Team Rocket was not in there, but that is actually not true. I did not inspect the poster thoroughly enough, but... apparently, in the poster, in the top right corner, Team Rocket is actually there. Like, they will still be present with Jesse, James, Meowth, and Wobbuffet. Like, on the poster, they were just... They were pretty much carried by the big, like, new bear Pokemon. So that, like, I just want to correct myself on that, and I do apologize. But, anyways, going on to the big news regarding what they did with Pokemon is... the Pokemon has actually announced... the release date of the anime and what's pretty much going to be happening there. So first off, they have mentioned that the anime will be making a 1-hour season premiere on TV Tokyo, and that it will be released on November 17th, just a day before the release of the games of Pokemon Sun and Moon, which that on November 18th is going to be both the Japanese and North American release. And by the way, if you are in Europe, you got to wait a little bit longer on November 23rd. But going into my source here on Anime News Network, just a little description of what's going to be going on with Pokemon Sun and Moon anime. Satoshi, which is the Japanese name for Ash, narrates the video. Oh, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, on top of that, Pokemon has actually released a 30-second commercial regarding... like, just revealing a little bit of info on what's going to happen in the anime. But anyways, it says here, saying he is beginning his adventure in the Alola region, where he will meet new friends and Pokemon and participate in new battles. The anime's announcement slated, the anime will feature new Pokemon and new characters, and the story of Ash will encounter Kapu Kokeko, a god who protects the Alola region. So I guess they want to try to throw in a bit of Moana in there, where... like, I guess Ash is going to be Moana and Kapu Kokeko is going to be Maui. I have no idea. Like, I just find it funny that we do have a little bit of similarities there. The announcement also reveals that Ash will go to school in the series, and the series will follow his school activities as he aims for graduation. Yeah, good luck with that, Ash. I mean... You spent like nearly two decades trying to be a Pokemon master, and like, I don't see any progress with that. So far, you have yet to be a Pokemon master, so what makes you think that you're gonna be graduating this time? I don't know. I highly doubt on that. Maybe you will, just for the sake of continuing the series until, like, Pokemon announces the next games, like, Pokemon, I don't know, Pokemon Up and Down. I don't know, but yeah, like, yeah, Ash trying to get a goal done. Yeah, sure. Just like how he is trying to be a Pokemon master. But, you know, it's actually pretty interesting how they reveal more information regarding Pokemon Sun and Moon, where, like, yeah, it's going to be more of your tip. Like, from what I've seen in the promo, it is going to be a bit more of your typical Pokemon series, where it's going to be a bit of the same thing, where on every episode Ash is going to encounter a new Pokemon, he'll interact with it, Team Rocket is going to do something goofy and try to kidnap the Pokemon while some Pokemon action ensues. So there is going to be a bit of that action in that regard, but now we got the new twist of Ash going to school, and I guess they're going to restart with the amount of new human characters as well. Of course they got some from there's going to be, like, the ones from the games that they introduce, including the Alolan form of Professor Oak. But at the same time, we're also going to see, like, a whole new batch of other new characters and, like, their abilities, their personalities, and all that kind of stuff. So there is that part right there. And, you know, it is pretty interesting how they're not going to go and bring in some of the other new ones. Like, you're not going to see Brock come back. You're not going to see Misty. You're not going to see May. You're not going to see Dawn. You're not going to see all the other women that Ash, like, pretty much hangs out with throughout his journeys. There's going to be, well, apparently in school, there's going to be a new batch of ladies for Ash. But what is actually worth noting here, however, is that it does incorporate a brand new anime style. This isn't the same thing as they've previously done before. Like, technically, yeah, the Pokemon still looks like Pokemon. Like, Pikachu still looks like Pikachu no matter what. But when you look at the style of the human characters, it does look like it's going into a new direction. Like, they're going in the style of, like, Digimon, in a sense. I think that's the best way to put it, is that the anime style looks more Digimon-esque. It's a bit different than how it was in the previous animes. Like, if you look at the promo of Pokemon Sun and Moon, or if you watch all the commercials for the anime, you'll notice that there is a slight difference than how it is before. Now, is it going to really improve the series? Is it going to take it on a better direction? That I honestly don't know, but it is, you know, I do admire it that it wants to do something a little bit different. They're not going to do the same thing over and over again, where Ash is just going to hop from gym to gym and try to go on his quest to be a Pokemon master. You know, adding this school element is a bit like a fresh twist to it. And, you know, there is, you know, admittedly, like, even though it is a little bit ridiculous that now Ash is going to school after, like, almost two decades, like, you know, I admire that they are trying to do something different. They want to try something new with the series. So at least there is that. So if you guys are excited for the anime to be released, and if you're coincidentally in Japan, it's going to be coming out on November 17th. And I'm guessing maybe in 2017, you guys will be the people in North America will be getting Pokemon Sun and Moon, the anime. Oh, actually, I lied. Okay, hold on a sec. What do you know? Or wait. Hold on. Oh, no, maybe it's going to take a while. I just found this, actually. The currently airing Pokemon X, Y, and Z television anime premiered in Japan on October 2015, and then premiered... Oh, no, wait. Oh, never mind. Okay, no. We currently have Pokemon X, Y, and Z. Never mind. Okay. No, but yeah, in 2017, in North America, we will be getting Pokemon Sun and Moon, the anime. And so finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. Now, for this one, I was debating if I wanted to do this, and I considered, you know what, I got a lot of things to say about it, might as well go all in, because, oh my god, the things that occurred here, and considering that, like, it got pretty big in the news, and a lot of people actually have something to say about it. But before I get into the bits of news, allow me to tell you a little bit of a story. Now, this actually does coincide with what actually happened here. And this news actually, coincidentally, it happened the day after the second presidential debate with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And I remember at the end of the day, I was just so fed up of Donald Trump, and I was just so fed up of the U.S. elections. It was probably the first time I felt like, let's just get this election over with. Let's just get Hillary Clinton as president, rather you like it or not. Let's just have her on top of there, and let's just move on with our lives, you know? I'm just sick and tired of hearing it all the time. The biggest thing, I was just so tired of hearing about Donald Trump specifically. I'm tired of all the stupid bullcrap that he keeps on saying. I'm tired of how much of a horrible human being he is. Rather it be his immature ways, or just like all the sexual assaults that he has done to numerous of women. I'm tired of like even arguing with stupid Trump supporters on social media. Actually, no. I apologize. I shouldn't actually say stupid Trump supporters. I should just say just Trump supporters, because that would actually imply that there are some smart Trump supporters, which that's kind of like a mythical creature at this point. But yeah, like, I'm just pretty much tired of hearing about everything Donald Trump, and I want to just move on. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is why I talk about animation, because I feel like on the internet nowadays, the more serious the issue, the stupider that people get. So I might as well just relax and move on. You know, tomorrow's going to be another day. I can start off fresh and, you know, think about the good things that happen in life. But nope. Even animation has its sense of Donald Trump-style stupidity. And honestly, you might find me literally insane or just literally over the top when I say this, but honestly, this bit of news here is actually worse than Donald Trump being president. Because I know that's absolutely ludicrous to say, but here's my argument. The thing is, Donald Trump being president, it's not gonna happen. I'm like 80 to 90% sure that Hillary Clinton is going to win the office no matter what. And like, you'd have to be absolutely stupid to go and vote for Donald Trump as president. Like, there's just no freaking way. But this thing, on the other hand, no matter what, it is gonna happen. And I am, of course, talking about Sony Pictures Animation's Emoji Movie Express Yourself. The bit of news that actually occurred was that Sony actually released a brand new image revealing a lot more characters, along with some of the people who are going to be playing these characters on top of a bit of a storyline. So going into my source here on Cartoon Brew, it actually states, the film will tell the story of Gene, voiced by TJ Miller, a multi-expression emoji who stands out from the other single facial expression emojis because he was born without a filter. He enlists the help of his friends High Five, played by James Corden, as well as a codebreaker emoji Jailbreak, played by Ilana Glazer, to help him become normal like the other emojis. The journey to normality involved threats to the entire emoji universe. A character named, oh god, Poop Daddy. I'll get back to that in a minute. And traveling through different mobile apps, the latter being a plot device that can be seen either as a 90-minute commercial for mobile apps or, as Sony puts it, an app-venture. On top of that, I think, honestly, I'll give credit to Amity on this one. He actually phrased it well. The film's theme is not so subtly hammered into the subtitle, Express Yourself. This isn't just mindless entertainment. So, really put emphasis on mindless there. Sony seems to be telling us. Audiences will receive an inspiring message about self-improvement alongside Poop Daddy's antics. Sony Animation President Christine Belson stressed the film's theme is in today's announcement. Over 6 billion emojis are texted every day, and emojis have become a universal language that transcends age and culture. The power of emojis is that they allow you to express yourself in a fast and very fun way. And that is what our movie is about, self-expression. We are very lucky to have some of the smartest and funniest actors today bringing their unique voices to the movie. Okay, now before all this, I just need to stress, I just need to let this out, because honestly, for me, this is the biggest problem that this movie has, and like, the biggest issue that I have with all this announcement. Sony, you gotta learn to freaking draw the line somewhere! You can't just go all willy-nilly and do whatever kind of stupid thing you wanna do just because this is an emoji movie. Do you realize you literally have a piece of crap as your character named Poop Daddy. Now, I don't know if you want him to be a villain or just a comic relief, but it still doesn't change the fact you have a character named Poop Daddy that is a legit piece of crap. You might as well, if you're going to go that far, you might as well make Poop Daddy your freaking mascot, because lately, that's all you've been doing. It's a piece of crap that just spews out bad jokes. That's all it is. Like, really? You gotta do that. You legit have to make a piece of crap as your character. My God. Have you no shame, Sony? I have to ask, have you seriously no freaking shame? Oh my God, I'm sorry, but I just had to let that out because the idea of a character that the name Poop Daddy is just, oh my God, I swear. Like, I shouldn't be surprised that Sony Pictures Animation would think up of such stupid ideas, but somehow they always get to me. They always get to me, the sheer amount of stupidity that is ensued into this. It's like, are you kidding me? Are you for real, man? Are you freaking for real? But anyways, interestingly enough, let's look into some of the other aspects. Let's get down into the image outside of Poop Daddy. And you know what's actually very interesting is that the reaction that I just did, even though some people could say that is over the top, but some people actually do feel the same way, but not necessarily to Poop Daddy, but to some of the other characters. Now, in this image, you can already tell the character designs are just god-awful. It's a lot like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs in a way that it just looks terrible. It looks like it was done by anyone who just doesn't know how to frickin' draw, and they just look absolutely disgusting on top of that. It's like it's like they took those emojis and just completely mutilate them. That's what it is. It's just a bunch of mutilated emojis where they want to try to put in as much details as possible with the same appeal as freaking Norm of the North. Which, on top of that, I just want to add, even Norm of the North has more dignity than the Emoji Movie to literally go and make a character that's literally a piece of crap named Poop Daddy. Do you realize that Norm of the North has more dignity than the Emoji Movie? Okay, but going back into the image, you got other characters as well. You got High Five, played by James Corden, which is literally a hand. That's all it is. It's literally a hand with a face, a band-aid, and a finger, and feet. That's all it is. Like, I don't know why that alone is an indication that you're just running out of ideas. Like, you just want to make... It's like somehow during the press meeting... during Sony Pictures Animation, it's like, okay, we need a new character. Who's got ideas? Someone raised their hand. Good idea. We're going to use that hand. Like, that's literally the idea of High Five. But the one that actually got the most controversy, funny enough, if you think Poop Daddy was bad, the one that people got, a lot of people criticized about is actually Jailbreak, the girl character. And the reason why she actually has a lot of controversy onto it is because she, like, everybody pretty much says it, considering that the Emoji Movie is factually Sony's attempt to rip off the Lego Movie, Jailbreak is an absolute ripoff of Wild Style. Everybody points it out. It is absolutely obvious. There's no hiding it. It's basically Wild Style, where they want to make this strong female character. And honestly, it's just ridiculous, but it's mostly in terms of the design that is very controversial, considering that if you look into the image, she is the only one that is fully clothed because she is a girl, while everyone else has free range to be naked. Like, you got Jean, who's literally just a freaking yellow circle with arms and legs. You got godforsaken High Five, which is literally a hand with feet. You got Poop Daddy, that is a piece of crap with arms and legs. But then you have also Jailbreak. Jailbreak, however, is different from the rest because she has to be fully clothed because she is a female. And a lot of people are really angry at Sony because they're pretty much generalizing women in terms of character design. So like if you gotta go and make a female character, you gotta give her you gotta give her attractive looking curves, you gotta make her look cute in a way. You know, like, I wouldn't be surprised if what they want to do with Jailbreak is similar with Mavis from Hotel Transylvania, where, she has absolutely no personality. She is an absolutely bland character, bland as the color of her skin, but she looks like a cute goth girl. Might as well go and make some Rule 34 out of her as much as you can. And if you don't believe me, oh boy, if you go in the dark areas of the web, of the internet, hey boy, the things they have done to Mavis. Oh boy, you can tell where the fan base is going with it. but anyways, never mind about that. But, she's pretty much going into, Jailbreak is pretty much going into massive controversy, pretty much just generalizing female characters with her design alone. Like, we haven't seen her in action, but just her design is not getting any positive reviews, as much as the Emoji Movie itself, by the way. And speaking of the Lego Movie, there's just one quick thing that I want to mention, that this is probably the number one thing that, defenders would want to use. Like, people who want to stay positive regarding the Emoji Movie is most likely going to use the infamous Lego Movie excuse to say that this might actually turn out to be good. And if you guys don't know what the Lego Movie excuse is, you can find out more information. There was actually a fantastic article on rotoscopers.com on why the Lego Movie excuse is just nothing but bullcrap. It's basically saying that you can literally make a movie based on whatever you want. It could be based on Legos, it could be based on emojis, it could be based on Pez, it could be based on a board game, it could be based on whatever, and it actually has a chance to come out to be a really good movie. But here's one of the biggest problems, I just want to mention this right now. During the making of the Lego Movie, has there been a huge amount of people criticizing the idea of the Lego Movie itself as much as the Emoji Movie? I remember even back then, during the making of it, when they were announcing, the cast members, the concept of the Lego Movie, what they want to do with it. Like, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was really weird that they want to make a Lego Movie. I don't know what the fridge they were going to do with it. But I never questioned it that it's going to be god-awful, that it's going to be stupid. And I don't think anybody else did during the making of that film. But with the Emoji Movie, it's the exact opposite. Considering that they're making a film based on godforsaken emojis, it is a clear sign that Hollywood basically ran out of ideas. And even Sony Pictures Animation just ran out of ideas and are so desperate to go and make a movie based on freaking emojis out of all things. Okay, now there is that aspect, but let me also get into the story. The one where apparently Gene is a multi-faced, a multi-expression emoji, and he wants to go on this quest to become normal. Okay, so first off, the concept of the world of emojis where Gene is this multi-expression emoji and wants to become normal. First off, that honestly makes no sense whatsoever. I just don't get it. The thing is that, has anybody ever heard of a multi-expression emoji? Honestly, this is brand new to me. I have never heard of a multi-expression emoji. I don't know anybody who uses a multi-expression emoji. I don't know if it actually exists, but it makes no sense. It's like they're creating this world and a problem that honestly, it just doesn't exist. It kind of, funny enough, it makes it less credible in the world of emojis, honestly. It's like they're making up things to make this happen. What kind of idea is a multi-expression emoji? Seriously, it sounds like one of the most useless inventions ever. So, it's kind of like a problem that really isn't a problem, seriously. But then the real issue that I have is actually Gene's quest to be normal. And while I was reading it, I kind of realized that the plot actually sounds very similar. In a way, really think about it, guys. This is, in a way, it's kind of like the exact same plot of Hotel Transylvania 2. Now, if you think about it, the story, in a sense, it's pretty much you have Dennis, which is Johnny and Mavis's son, and Dracula and his friends are on a quest to go and make Dennis normal in a way, or at least normal in the sense of Transylvania, where like you got like they want to make Dennis into a vampire, and that like that's pretty much the whole mission. And it's pretty much the same thing as this, where Gene wants to become normal in the world of emojis. Drac wants to make Dennis normal in the world of Transylvania. And honestly, like, this is just completely, like, recycling story material here. And even at that, like, when you look at, like, when you look into Hotel Transylvania 2, it's not even well executed. Like, because the thing is, like, they, like, that one, too, wants to have this hammered down message of be who you are, self-expression, just be yourself, people will accept you for who you are and all that kind of stuff. But then suddenly, right at the end, they decided to just drop all that and just say, well, you know what, screw it, okay, Dennis is actually a vampire, okay, happily ever after, whatever. But, yeah, like, in here, it's like literally they're just taking the plot from Hotel Transylvania 2 and integrating it into this. Very few changes are made. Instead of Transylvania, it's pretty much like emojis, and the main character, it's now like the one that wants to change. It's just ridiculous. And plus the fact that already some people are mentioning that it sounds like a bit of a ripoff of Wreck-It Ralph. And there is a bit of an element of Wreck-It Ralph that they are ripping off, because it does have a similar plot line where Ralph wants to be seen a hero, and he goes into this journey jumping from different games to games to become, you know, accepted by his people. And it's the same thing here, where you got Gene, who's going to be jumping from different app to app to go and become normal. So this is basically ripping off not only Hotel Transylvania 2, but, like, clearly ripping off Wreck-It Ralph as well. So, goodbye to any sense of freaking originality in this feature. And by the way, any sense of originality, now, the previous news regarding the Emoji Movie has already been a massive turnoff regarding, like, what they want to do with it. Especially how previously they mention how the stars of this movie is not necessarily going to be the characters like Gene, High Five, Jailbreak, or Poop Daddy. It's going to be the apps, because they are actually going to use real-life apps like Spotify to be prominently featured. That's what they really want to go and do with this movie. It's mostly, like Amity said in the Cartoon Brew article, it's a 90-minute commercial for mobile apps. And knowing Sony Pictures Animation's track record on trying to advertise things on their movies, especially with Smurfs, like, they will try to force it in. Like, oh my god, I remember when I saw the Smurfs, the 2011 movie, like, one of the most cringeworthy moments is when they entered upon, F.A.O. Schwartz, and they would blatantly advertise the variety of toys that are in there, and it's just ridiculously unsubtle the way that it's just such a cash-in to advertise all these different things. And even before, like, the days of Sony Pictures Animation, like, they have a terrible record of trying to advertise stuff, like with 8 Crazy Nights, where you see all the different advertisements everywhere for different shops, for different restaurants, and all that kind of stuff. It just ends off being absolutely ridiculous. And another thing that I want to mention is actually regarding what Christine Belson mentioned, the end of her statement, when she said, "We are very lucky to have some of the smartest and funniest actors today bringing their unique voices to this movie." Okay, I just need to say this. No. Nobody working on this feature is either funny or they're the smartest. Okay, maybe they are funny, but not the smartest. And they're not going to bring their smartness or funniness onto this feature. I can guarantee you that. Like, in recent years, the only movie that is actually okay to say that they actually brought in the funniest and smartest people onto their animated feature would be The Secret Life of Pets. Because it actually does have a prominent cast of people who are known to be equally smart and highly hilarious. Like, they have a cast of Louis C.K., Eric Stonestreet, Kevin Hart, Jenny Slate, Dana Carvey even. Like, they got all those amazingly talented, hilarious, and highly intelligent people. You know, that, like, The Secret Life of Pets is okay to say that they got the smartest and funniest actors working on this feature film. In The Emoji Movie, however, they are absolutely not. The thing is, the only reason why that people like TJ Miller or James Corden or Ilana Glazer would ever agree to sign on to The Emoji Movie is very similar to why Genndy Tartakovsky accepted to direct Hotel Transylvania 3. It's not because of any creative bullcrap or they think like the script is funny or like they think this is a good idea or anything like that. They're just desperate for the money. That's all it is. They need some of that emoji money. They need that emoji money. They have nothing to do so far. And they, you know, they just gotta do it. They gotta do it because of the money. Literally no other reason. No other reason for that. And you know, the funny thing is that there are some people out there, even with all this, even with all the evidence that this is going to be a complete disaster, there are actually some people who would go out and at least try to defend or, at the very least, not be prejudiced. They don't want to say anything negative towards it because, you know, it's wrong to be, to immediately judge if a movie is good or bad, especially with something like The Emoji Movie, which is only coming out next year, and I don't think it's even finished at this point. They're pretty much going out there, what I'm trying to say is, like these kinds of people, they don't want to immediately judge if this movie is good or bad, especially considering when you think about, a few months ago, we just went through that entire nightmare of a controversy with Ghostbusters, and you could see the absolute negative consequences of judging a movie before it would be released. So they don't want to do the same thing with The Emoji Movie. And some people would even say, hey, maybe this could actually turn out to be good. Who knows? But I'm going to be very honest with you guys. At least the way I see it, trying to find ways to defend The Emoji Movie just so you could be so desperate to not be prejudiced towards it, it's pretty much equal to why Donald Trump supporters want to vote for Trump just so they can desperately not vote for Hillary. You know, it's just, you just become so desperate, it makes yourself look really stupid. And, you know, the thing is, guys, I understand. The thing is, I understand completely, despite what I just said, I understand why they don't want to do it. You know, even myself, I under normal circumstances, usually all the time, I would go and say, I don't judge a movie saying that, oh, this is going to be good. Oh, this is going to be bad. I don't immediately do that. I just normally wait and see. And a good example is the way I reacted to Storks. When I see the trailers and stuff like that, I don't know how it's going to be. Maybe it's going to be good. Maybe it's going to be bad. So I don't know. I left my judging aside and all I said is that, I don't know, we'll see. And when I did see it, it turned out to be a pleasant surprise. So normally, under normal circumstances, I don't judge a movie just yet regarding if a movie is bad or not. However, there are a few instances when you just know. And I mean, this is honestly something that everybody does it. I mean, it's not just me, but millions of other people do that as well. It's just, there are times when you know when a movie is bad. You know this is gonna suck no matter what it is. And I mean, even this year, everybody has done that with Norm of the North. And, even with The Emoji Movie, honestly, I don't know about you guys, but there are just too many red flags that just indicate that this will be a bad movie no matter what. There are just too many things to list upon. I mean, the fact that this is going to be a movie based on emojis, it just tells me that, you know, they're absolutely running out, they're desperate for ideas and, you know, they don't know what else to do next. The fact that it is made at a completely hopeless animation studio with such a terrible track record, not just creatively, but often financially as well, where the last time that I have seen one of their movies and I don't feel ashamed and I don't feel stupid when watching it was the 2007 Surf's Up, probably their only good feature film. Like, the story, it is unoriginal. It rips off other films like Hotel Transylvania 2 and Wreck-It Ralph. The character designs are absolutely hideous and almost to the point, like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Norm of the North, that it's just it just looks unwatchable and it's disturbing to look at them. The characters themselves, like not just how they are designed, but just who these characters are, it's just absolutely stupid and they don't seem likable whatsoever. From like the basic standard emoji of Gene, you got the freaking hand of high five, the stereotypical strong girl of Jailbreak, and the literally that's another reason, the poop emoji, poop daddy, just poop daddy in general. The fact that Sony has previously announced that they are going to put their focus onto presenting many of the real-life apps that will be featured. So this is a, like Amidamidi said, a 90-minute commercial for apps. I mean, just all these factors, there's nothing, literally nothing, not story-wise, not character-wise, not concept-wise, not reputation-wise, not anything, not visually-wise. There's nothing that indicates me that it's going to be a good movie. Now, the only thing left that the Emoji Movie has to present at this point is just a trailer. That's all we need just now. It's going to be the trailer. And in that trailer, they're going to prove three things. Number one is going to be the animation itself. How the characters are going to move and how the environment around them will move. That's going to be one. Number two is going to be the tone. What are they aiming for? Who's going, like, what kind of target audience who they want to aim for? Is it going to be more comical? Is it going to be more like a 90-minute cartoon with what they have done with Hotel Transylvania? Or do they want to go incorporate more of a story? And also the humor. How funny is it? Is it going to be enjoyable? Even though with such a garbage plot, garbage animation, garbage characters, is it going to be at least funny? Will I laugh a few times? Like, even with Hotel Transylvania, like, there are a lot of things that fail about that movie, but at the very least, I do laugh at some of the antics. Like, I actually enjoy, like, one, like, admittedly, my favorite character in Hotel Transylvania would have to be the Steve Buscemi werewolf, because he actually has a lot of the funniest moments in both films, actually. And, so is it at least gonna be funny? So those are the three factors that it has left to test upon for the trailer. And if it fails on all those accounts, then we might as well, then this movie is going to be a disaster. This is honestly going to be the next Norm of the North. It's going to be the worst animated film of the decade. It's going to be met with such ridicule. And honestly, I'm going to be very honest. I want to ask you guys, let me be honest here. Is there anybody at this point now who legitimately wants to go and watch Emoji Movie Express Yourself? Like, literally, actually go pay money into the theaters. To actually drive their way to the theaters to pay money for a ticket to legitimately sit there and watch 90 minutes worth of the Emoji Movie. Is anybody actually going to do that? Because honestly, at this rate, it's going to be a box office bomb. If anything, this could put, like, this movie alone could potentially kill off Sony Pictures Animation altogether. I mean, never mind, like, the other movies that they're going to release this year. I mean, and it's really unfortunate because, honestly, I was getting so close to, you know, giving respect for Sony Pictures Animation, because what they've offered so far with Smurfs The Lost Village, it looks promising. But at this rate, I mean, like, there could be a chance that all their movies are going to flop. Smurfs The Lost Village is going to be released way too close to Fast 8. The Star is going to be released way too close to Star Wars Episode 8. And then you got the Emoji Movie, which I don't know what the fridge are they doing with it. And so far, the two TV shows that they have, the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Hotel Transylvania TV series, doesn't look like it's going to appeal to much people. And it's only going to survive for just one season, and literally that's it. Like, unless they pull off a freaking miracle with it, I don't know. Like, we could be seeing the end of Sony Pictures Animation really soon, and by, Like, honestly, they're not going to... I don't think they're even going to last this... They're not going to last, like, in the 2020 decade. Like, before that decade will arrive, Sony Animation is just going to shut down. They put all their cards onto one hand in 2017, and, yeah, they're going to flop miserably. Like, just you wait. Sony's going to die soon. And that shall be all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Matt Supercoonet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.